From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. First this morning, co-host Jay Burke and I speak with Mike Rogge. He is the owner, editor, and publisher of The Mountain Gazette. It's the first part in our upcoming series on mountain living publications. Then long days of sunlight mean lots of UV rays, and we turn to a conversation about our skin with dermatologist Dr. Jen Haley. Co-host Mary Beth Maziarz and I speak with her. Stay tuned to find out how you can increase sun protection from the inside out and more about our biggest organ, the skin. This all coming up this hour on The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Jay Burke.
The writer Dick Dorworth tells the story of the outdoor publication Mountain Gazette like this. Mountain Gazette has been a free-form, free-spirited favorite publication of many literate, free-form, free-spirited Westerners since it was born. And he called it the best alternative mountain lifestyle print publication ever seen in America. It thrived in the 60s and 70s and then died and was resurrected from 2000 to 2012. When maybe it got gobbled up by the digital age. Enter our next guest, Mike Rogge, who purchased and revived the Mountain Gazette. If you know the Mountain Gazette, you know what we're talking about. And if not, listen in to hear this conversation with the editor, publisher, and owner of the Mountain Gazette. Mike Rogge has worked as a journalist and film producer and has been at Ski the East, continued at Powder Magazine, ESPN, Vice Sports, and the Ski Journal. His film production also includes short films that have appeared worldwide from PBS to the Banff Mountain International Film Festival. Mike Rogge, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Mike, I first have to know how the Mountain Gazette was sort of a legacy for you. How did it evolve into something for you that you wanted to eventually purchase?
It's funny, at the time I had left Powder Magazine, I'd basically left the ski industry. I was up in Alaska making a short film for a company called Grundens. And I was sitting at a bar called the Norwegian Rep. And Doug Schnitzbahn, who was once an editor of the Gazette, and Peter Cray reached out to me almost like within an hour of each other and said, hey, you know, Mike, the Mountain Gazette is for sale. And so my history of the Mountain Gazette really comes through Peter Cray, who's the author of The God of Skiing. Peter talked about the Gazette. At that point, it had been shuttered. I was interviewing Peter about his novel, and he spoke about it like this just like Norse god, this legendary thing that, you know, classic, like, we'll call it elder ski bum to younger ski bum. You should have been here yesterday. You should have been here two decades ago, as if I had any choice. But I had missed obviously the 60s and 70s of the Gazette. And then from 2000 to 2012, I was living on the East Coast for most of that and then went to work for Powder. So I was kind of nose heavy into Powder, not really looking elsewhere. And the Gazette had shuttered. And at that point, it's kind of like now, no one really like bats an eye when a publication shuts down, mostly because it happens almost daily. But the timing was right. Again, I think being at this like commercial fishing bar in Alaska, it was a really good like dichotomy of like, I'm currently holding a camera, shooting some really grisly people. And maybe there's a little more poetry in my future. And that was kind of how I fell in love with the Gazette. And I was lucky that the previous owner just really wanted to see it continue on. It was great.
Yeah. Was it really the digital age that, and sort of the new advertising model and, you know, the gear guides and the top 10 places to, you know, ski, climb, eat, whatever, that maybe made the Mountain Gazette crumple for a while?
So I can speak towards like the Gazette's history. I think it's really like, I use baseball as a good metaphor or analogy for it, I guess, is like, you really want to cover your bases. You want to have, you know, strong people at every position. And I think with the Gazette, they always nailed the editorial, always. There was never a period in their time where they weren't. But the business side of it, I always say, like, take any other item you know, in this sentence, like literally replace the word magazine. I make pizza and I give it away for free every month. How does that business survive? I make ski goggles and I give them away for free for every month. Cool. You're bankrupt now. And that's sort of what the freemium model kind of welcomes to you. And I don't think it's the job of only subscribers or only advertisers to carry a publication. I think it's the job of the publisher to do that. You know, you just can't, it's very simple, man. Media companies aren't tech companies. You can't spend beyond your means. For me, I thought, well, when we're going to spend, we're going to spend on quality. We're going to spend on, you know, great writing, great photography, great art. And I knew that if we were putting out a quality product, we'd be able to not survive. Who wants to go into business to just survive? That sounds terrible. We wanted to thrive. And, you know, we're coming up on 4 years since we launched subscriptions. We've been profitable since month three. So we're really proud of that fact. And we don't, you know, get out too in front of our skis. You know, we're definitely like, we got our toes on the ground. We're in a forward stance, and unless we're skiing backwards, and that's kind of fun too. But, you know, I think for media today, it's kind of like just measuring your priorities. And with us, our priority always from day one has been the happiness of our readers, the satisfaction of our readers.
That's awesome. Before I want to get into the, like, you know, painting the picture for our listeners of what the Mountain Gazette is. But first of all, I mean, this is a good segue from where what we've been talking about. You got to tell us a little bit about the contract. I mean, and I know you shared the story with me last time I saw you in Tahoe, but tell me about the napkin.
Absolutely. So Blake Damasio, who runs Elevation Outdoors and a couple other monthly mags, he's from West Virginia. I got back from Alaska and he and I started talking, and, you know, Jay, you and I have chatted before, like, I love media. I can talk media the way most, I guess, guys could talk sports or politics or whatever at a bar. Like, I mean, for me, it's like, I love media. I love people that make things. I like people that create things. And Blake and I just realized we were cut from the same cloth, you know? And so he gave me a price of what he thought it was worth. We talked about like some of the astronomical values. And Mountain Gazette, it's one of those things where like everybody may have owned the Mountain Gazette at some point. Someone could walk up to me in a bar and say, I used to own Mountain Gazette, and I'd believe them. And so, you know, Blake and I went back and forth. And one of the things that I really want him to understand was that I couldn't do this with venture capital. I had to do it on my own. And because of that, you know, I don't come from money. I'm from a small town upstate New York. You know, I would never say I'm self-made. I've had a lot of help along the way, certainly with friends and family, but not financially. And so I'd saved a bunch of money for me, what was a bunch of money. And we ended up deciding we were going to meet an outdoor retailer in Denver. And Blake and I both kind of find that convention to be a little stuffy inside. It will always be the great irony of outdoor business that you get the entire industry together to be inside a convention center with, like, you know, just terrible lighting and like it's just brutal carpet and it's uncomfortable. And but anyways, we decided to meet at a bar across the street from the convention center. I had like practiced my pitch in the elevator, you know, like kind of like if you'd watched the old SNLs with Al Franken, like, you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you, you're gonna do this, you got it, pal. And so I went, I sat down with Blake. The waitress asked, what can I get you? And Blake said, well, give us 5 minutes. Let's find out how this conversation goes. And I'm like, oh boy. And so I slipped an envelope that I'd got from the front desk that morning across the table with a check in it. And I said, Blake, look, I'm not trying to insult you with this offer. This is what I can afford. And I really think I can bring Mountain Gazette back. And he opened it up and he looked at it. He shrugged his shoulder and he goes, all right, buy me a beer. And if the check clears, it's yours. And so I was surprised he didn't actually cash it right there on the spot. But we ordered two Coors Banquet beers at 8 a.m. And we just, it was cool. At that point, our conversation totally changed from what the Mountain Gazette could be to what the Mountain Gazette was going to be. And we really enjoyed it. And I actually, like, in my office, for those of you listening, obviously, I'm pointing just across the room. We just had that bill of sale framed. I ripped a page out of my notebook. This is more like a Craigslist transaction for a dirt bike than like some crazy, there were no lawyers involved. And yeah, we went across the street with this bill of sale. I had Dan Abrams, the owner of Philo Gear, who coincidentally enough officiated my wife and I's wedding. He signed the bill of sale. So yeah, Dan's signature is on the most two most important documents of my entire life. So it was a really cool and you know, this doesn't really start without Blake taking a chance. And I think for him, he just didn't want to pay the storage bills in Boulder anymore where the magazines were housed. So.
Well, I mean, such a great story. And, you know, when I met you a couple of years ago, I was surprised that we hadn't met before, kind of in the circles we run in, but, you know, it quickly became apparent. I mean, just how passionate you are about this and, you know, being a mountain guy my entire life and subscribing to Powder since the late 70s, early 80s, you know, and I mean, you and I immediately started talking and bantering about journalism and photography and music and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, names like Peter Cray that you've already brought up and Dave Reddick and Lee Cohen and Markowitz and Cy Whitley. I mean, these are just, you know, it quickly becomes apparent that the publication is just such a core is, you know, now that you have the reins of, you know, this publication, like what do you find most rewarding about that? Is it nurturing those relationships and keeping those doors open? And
so we're finding, Jay, that, you know, we're growing really quickly outside of mountain towns. And my theory on that is that, and I'm guilty of this early in my career, whenever outdoor publications tried to speak to folks who lived in San Francisco or Los Angeles, New York, they sort of talked to them like a toddler. They gave them top 10 lists. And what I like is I'm not giving them that. I'm giving them Lee Cohen. I'm giving them Dave Reddick, which is like such a trip to have Reddick as a senior photographer for Mountain Gazette. I'm giving them Markowitz. You know, Markowitz shot the Seth Morrison cover from almost 2 years ago. And I think what's cool is like all the things that, you know, the three of us grew up loving about good outdoor journalism, outdoor photography, outdoor art, we're now providing that to a broader audience and we're showing them a little bit of respect. You know, we've sort of have this credo inside the Gazette that is, you know, even if you don't live in the mountains could live in you. There's certainly been times in my life where my wife and I, you know, we spent 4 months living in San Francisco because we were in between places, you know, and, you know, I spent a ton of time in New York City now. And I think, you know, meeting very passionate skiers, very good skiers who just happen to live in New York because that's where their life is and thinking, you know, you deserve this content just as much as anybody else. And as far as what I enjoy the most, I still enjoy new contributors making their debut in the Gazette. And when you're a feature writer, like it's such a hard time in media, giving them a pre-negotiated buyout rate, giving them a range of saying like, make it as long as it needs to be. And the range is huge, you know, saying, look, like I'm a light-handed editor. Like I'm going to make sure your story reads great, but I'm not going to change your sentence structure. I'm not going to change the way you write. We want your voice. And then making sure that we, you know, we're printing the magazine today, we will pay all of our contributors and they will get paid direct deposit before they receive the magazine. Now, why that seems like such a small thing maybe for most of your listeners, but when you're a freelancer, too often, a lot of outdoor publications don't ever pay you. And so what happens is you get your piece of work that you're so proud of and you're immediately hit with anxiety because you're like, oh no, I have to like invoice them again and like ask them, I hope they'll pay me within 60 days. We try to pay you at least 2 weeks before you receive the magazine. So it's a good experience. And I really think that comes out in the editorial. Our readers can sense that like our contributors take a lot of pride in putting their work in the Mountain Gazette, which then turns into a ton of pride for being a reader for Mountain Gazette. It's sort of, we're certainly growing quickly, but it does still feels like a small thing that, you know, it's like finding a good band first. You know, like our readers have found a magazine that they really care about. And when their friends find it, they get that moment of like, oh yeah, I've known about this for a few years. And that's pretty cool to me. Sure. I love all of it. I love all of it.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Mike Rogge. He is the owner, publisher, and editor of The Mountain Gazette. And Mike, now might be a great time to go back to, you know, for those of our listeners who are listening to this conversation saying, what? The Mountain Gazette? Never heard of it. Describe to our listeners what it is, what it's about, what they can find when they open it up.
Okay. Well, thank you, one, for listening. this is great that you're here. So obviously you like good media since you're here. So Mountain Gazette, we believe in good media. We're published twice per year in the fall and in the spring. Our content is about outdoor culture. And if you're thinking, well, that's pretty broad, that's the point. We have limited advertising. In our next issue, we have 160 pages. It's 11 by 17, which means when you open it up, it's almost 2 feet wide. And if you're thinking that's like the size of a poster, exactly. We felt that it needed to be that size because outdoor photography looks better when it's big, because the outdoors are big. It sits on your coffee table. And if you're thinking, why every 6 months? It's because we put almost 500,000 to 1 million words in every single issue. It's meant to be savored. It's a slow burn. And if your next thing you're thinking is, this guy is crazy, he's doing this from his rich parents' basement, I'm not crazy. We're totally good. We're profitable. We are self-funded. We have no venture capital. And yeah, lastly, we did an April Fool's joke where we actually said we sold 60% of the magazine to one of our subscribers, which is Joel McHale from the show Community. And we had about 12 to 13 people that didn't get the joke and emailed us saying, I trusted you. You bastard, I trusted you. They were so upset with me. And we had to be like, oh, it was just a joke. We're really sorry. And like, I had to actually issue a public apology to some of our readers because they were so upset that we had given up our independence, but we're still independent, still independently owned. It's my wife and I at the helm, and we don't intend to sell it anytime soon.
We can get a little incensed about those things that we're quite passionate about, right?
Well, I understand, you know, I mean, we're in a really precarious time in mountain culture, especially in Utah, when you have folks that, you know, started DVD through the mail businesses, buying ski resorts, thinking they know. And what I'd love to say to like Reed Hastings, if you're listening, is like, why don't you let me run Netflix for like a month or two and see how I do? I'm a ski bum. I know how to ski backwards. I know nothing about the streaming business, but I have some ideas about it. So let's see how it works. Let's see how upset the company culture gets. You know, and that's just a quick one. You know, I'm not mad at you for being a billionaire, but I am mad at you for trying to privatize a great mountain.
So, hey, you know, what about the writing? If I think back to some of the issues of the Mountain Gazette and some of the articles, the writing, I would read it and I would say, how can this writing be so good and can transport me to a place that I won't get anywhere else? One article, I'm just going to give an example. It was this article about this person who discovered jumping off high places, normally in high mountain lakes and rivers, and the thrill about doing it. And I can't even capture the feeling it gave me. And so it's about the writing and it's about the photography.
Yeah, absolutely. So that particular piece was written by Megan Michelson, who lives here in Tahoe. And her pitch was, you know, her entire life, her mom used to take, you know, her siblings and Megan up to high alpine lakes. You know, they'd go for these long hikes here in the Sierra and it'd be hot and they'd go swimming and, you know, fully nude. And it was about, you know, skinny dipping, being free. You know, Megan kind of subtly made it about like safe spaces for women and this idea of like, you know, getting the hell out of society and being able to go like swim naked. And then what I love is she was like, and I'm going to do this for the Mountain Gazette. And so we have a senior photographer, Emily Tidwell. I knew she'd be perfect for it. She's so cool. Shoots for Red Bull, like all these awesome bike events. Emily and I talked about it and I was like, look, like however you and Megan want to approach this, I trust you. And that was it. And this is a story about women swimming naked in high alpine lakes. You know, I think that as an editor, it could be pretty precarious. You could like really, there's a fine line there between what's tasteful and what's not. And they knew that. And I think what was cool is I gave them so much freedom on that piece. And I really think that's something that, you know, if you read magazines and you think these all sound the same, and it's because you have a really heavy-handed editor that's trying to get the quote unquote, and I'm using air quotes here, voice of the magazine. Our voice of the magazine is the voices of our contributors, and our contributors change every issue. So the magazine doesn't feel stale. It feels fresh because perspectives change, time changes, you know, mountain towns change, like photography changes, everything changes to the point where every issue you get, it's going to feel really fresh. And yeah, that particular piece, I was really proud of. Megan did a great, great job with that one. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Mike, I mean, I want to continue to paint the picture for all the listeners. I mean, I'm always surprised, and I'm such a huge advocate of it. I mean, almost to a, like, probably annoyance to some people, but like, truly, it's just such a, like, the diversity of stories. I mean, I think you already brought up the Seth Morrison story. I think that was issue 198. I mean, you know, like, you know, I mean, and that's what you become when you're a subscriber. You're like, oh yeah, issue 198. Well, like, hit on, you know, I think about the story A Ramble in the City, you know, which is about this trail in Boston, 27 mile trek through Boston. I want, you know, it's pretty obvious to me, but I mean, in your mind, like, why subscribe to Mountain Gazette? Like, tell our readers, like, point blank.
Sure. Point number one, we don't need you to subscribe. We're okay. We have a big enough audience. We are profitable. We are happy. And what I always say is I'm making, I think, the same quality of magazine, you know, that we made when we had 400 people subscribe for 194. And we're thinking, cool, we have to get to 1,000 to break even. To now, you know, this year, for the first time, we're measuring our subscribers in the tens of thousands. And we're hopeful that in 2-3 years, we'll be measuring them in the hundreds of thousands. But what you're going to do is you're going to spend $80 a year with us. We're going to send you two huge magazines. And what we're going to do is be totally transparent. And here's what I'm going to do with that money. I'm going to send a message to the general inbox of Harry Bliss and Steve Martin and try to convince them to do a cartoon. Harry's going to try it first. Harry's going to like it. Then Steve Martin, like the actual Steve Martin, is going to say, well, I want to get in. And then he's going to do a cartoon for 200. And then they're going to do one for 201. And then in 202, they're going to do a comic strip. And if you're thinking, like, what does this have to do with my subscription? Well, what I'm doing, it's this really crazy idea, is I'm taking the amount of money you're giving me and I'm giving it to some of the best creators in the entire world, including Steve Martin, who might be the greatest comedian that's ever lived. We're also going to find young writers who are ambitious and a little crazy. And we're going to give them the craziest canvas they've ever had in their life to do, like, really inspiring work. We're going to give it to artists who have only seen their work on Instagram, only measure the quality of their work by likes. And what they're going to find out is our readers are also a little crazy. They're going to reach out to them and say, I want this 4 feet by 8 feet in my new house. Or how can I best support you? They're going to show up to your shows and say, hey, I saw your work in the Mountain Gazette. We have artists that tell me all the time, like, Mountain Gazette transforms their career because, not because of anything we do, other than just, we just display it to our readers. Our readers do the work. We are the craziest community in the entire world because we can change the course of, like, a GoFundMe for a member of our community. We can raise $25,000 for Protect Our Winners the night before the midterm elections. So literally, like, just like, we can do some wild stuff. And if all of that doesn't sound good to you, please go to any other outdoor website and enjoy your affiliate links and top 10 links and learn about those really cool, you know, ice cream sundaes that you can get in Breckenridge on a Friday night or whatever, those goofy articles that we all know and love, and see if they inspire you. But I would say, like, simply, if you're hoping to feel like you're not alone in this world and that, you know, you might be a little crazy for what you love in the outdoor space, like, Mountain Gazette might make you feel a little less alone.
I love it. And just to stack onto that a little bit, I mean, one of my favorite things, well, you guys do these great one-off t-shirts, and one of my favorites is Coney Marshall's My Home Girl. I mean, I was fortunate enough to work in the ski industry as a marketing director and knew Connie well. And I mean, when I saw that shirt, I was like, oh my God, I love this. But the best part of it is that, you know, proceeds went to, you know, really support a good cause, which is, you know, mental well-being at Alta.
Yeah, for your ski patrollers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Jay, I mean, I just want to jump in. Connie had told me back when I was a powder, how passionate she was about that organization and that they were raising, like, between $1,000 and $5,000 a year. And I remember thinking, like, we can do better. And so we raised about $6,000 just selling t-shirts to what I would say is the Little Cottonwood Canyon community.
For sure.
I got to give credit, a ton of folks that work at Snowbird bought those too. which is really cool. That tells you everything you need to know about the competitiveness of the Utah ski industry. Like when your neighbor, who you're, you know, hoping they pull over first, they go to the first ski resort, not the second, but they're buying Connie Marshall t-shirts. And we raised, I think, $5,000 to $6,000. And so we doubled the amount of money that they were bringing in. And that money goes directly to the mental health of ski patrollers that are involved in traumatic incidents. And again, like, I don't know how we measure that, the success of that program, other than like, it made a lot of people happy. Connie thought it was funny. And I'm hopeful that a few ski patrollers got the help they needed, you know, and support they needed that they probably didn't expect. And that's a big thing that we're trying to do with the Gazette, is we're trying to surprise people, delight people with things they don't expect. You know, like, we really like when to our general inbox, someone says like, hey, a friend of mine was in a ski accident, doesn't have insurance, and they have a big knee injury coming up. And we go on with the Gazette account on GoFundMe and throw $500 at it and say, hey, like, good luck, get back, like, send us your address. We send them like some comfortable, like, Mountain Gazette sweatshorts and a sweatshirt. And people are like, why do you do that? And I'm like, because no one else does, because nobody else does. And I think that's just what we're supposed to do. You know, I think a magazine's supposed to reflect the quality of the community. And I think our community is very high caliber, very cool. And so we want to be a good steward of that community and reflect that in our values and what we do with the magazine.
Yeah. So well said. And it just is a true reflection of what the product is. So, I mean, honestly, don't delay, folks. If you're listening, get out there and get your subscription.
Thank you, Jay.
Mike Rogge has been our guest. He is the editor and publisher of the Mountain Gazette. Mike, thanks so much for your time today on The Mountain Life. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
Well, sunrise this morning was at 7:44 a.m. and sunset will be at 8:09 p.m. this evening. That creates a lot of UV rays, especially at our altitude. Now, according to the Google, there is a 6 to 10% increase in UV exposure for every 1,000 feet of elevation. That's a whopping 48 to 70% more UV exposure in Park City than at sea level. So who better to have join us today than a dermatologist and one of our favorite to speak with, Dr. Jen Haley. Jen is a part-time Park City resident and practices in Scottsdale, Arizona. She practices dermatology in a holistic way, guiding her patients that good skin comes from the inside out. Jen Haley, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, we always love to talk to you because we can kind of go anywhere when we talk about all types of skin and health in general with you. But can you talk about those little stats I found on Google this morning? Because I wanted to know really how much stronger the UV rays are here and why do I have all these wrinkles?
I know. I mean, there's a reason we live there, right? That the outdoors are amazing and we certainly want to embrace that and we want to do it in a smart way. I mean, 7% per 1,000 feet in elevation. So you're looking at 49% more UV radiation. So it's not like ultraviolet rays, it's radiation that we're getting. And I've lived in a lot of different areas. I've lived in Hawaii at sea level where the sun is very bright and people are outside all the time. And I've lived in the mountains and I see changes in skin that are quite different. At sea level, I might see some more brownish changes to the skin like sunspots, and age spots or liver spots, people call them on the back of the hand. They're all the same thing. Whereas I find at elevation, we're getting more deep creases in the skin. And that has more to do with the UVA rays, the same rays that come in through windows. So that's why you want to be very careful about your selection of sunscreens and applying them every single day to the face, the neck, the chest, and the back of the hands that are exposed to the sun and visible light, which can be damaging, computer light, which can be damaging. And I'm not dogmatic about applying sunscreen really anywhere else. There are internal ways to protect yourself from the sun for the like non-high real estate areas. But as far as the face, the weathered areas that are going to see the sun on a regular basis, I like to look for a sunscreen that contains zinc oxide with or without titanium dioxide as a booster and applying that every single day when you're brushing your teeth just to protect from incidental light through the windows, through driving, when you're walking to and from the car, even if you don't think you're going to be outside, because day in and day out, that UVA radiation in particular causes little mutations and damage to the skin that destroys the collagen and makes it all fall apart and become disorganized. And no one wants that.
Certainly not. Well, let's go into a little bit about how you can give yourself sun protection from the inside out. And you said those are for the non-high real estate areas of your body. But, you know, wouldn't it be great to just take a pill and have it be a UV protection? And I get so tired of putting on layers and layers and layers of sunscreen. What are some things? Are there supplements you can take?
Absolutely. So food and supplements. And it always bewildered me that I studied undergraduate nutrition at Cornell. And when I went to medical school, we didn't learn much about nutrition at all. And it seemed bizarre to me that we would recommend pills to patients that they take by mouth, but we wouldn't consider food as a form of medicine when it's the ultimate form of medicine. And then supplements are just that. They are supplements. So if you think about vegetables and fruits that are in nature, they're very colorful. Well, those colors, those polyphenols protect them. And when they're organic, when they're grown in difficult environments like the Himalayas, they actually have even more nutrients than when we protect them in our farming methods. So the closer to the farm you can get, the higher and richer you will have in polyphenols. So think about colorful fruits and vegetables, whether it's wild Alaskan salmon and you're getting astaxanthin in that, or you're having purple cauliflower or colorful carrots, those kind of fruits and vegetables and krill oil as well can impart those polyphenol defensive mechanisms to our skin, and we don't get as much burning as we would if we didn't have those. So think about like a Mediterranean rich diet, right? And then there is a supplement. So you can also get polyphenols in supplemental form. You can get carotenoids in supplemental form. And then there's also a supplement, which we've talked about previously, called Polypodium leucotomus. And it's basically a fern block extract. So it's from ferns that have been around since the dinosaurs. And this has been shown in scientific studies to help with increasing the SPF of the skin to around a 7. They can't claim that because of FDA guidelines and things like that, but there are good studies on that. So there's a couple brands out there. There is one called HelioCare, H-E-L-I-O, Care. Helio means sun. There is SunSafe RX all over the counter. And then there's Inner Glow vitamins that's created by a board certified dermatologist. And those come in a form of a gummy. So I even give those to my kids. Very safe, safe during pregnancy. It's natural. And the more you take it, the more it builds in your skin and the longer protection you have. So for myself this morning in Arizona, it's about 80 degrees outside. I went outside. I had sunscreen on my face, my neck, my chest, the back of my hands. Yet I wore a tank top, like a sports bra. So my stomach, my back, my arms were being exposed and for 30 minutes and I have no burn, no tan. And that's because it's just enough to make vitamin D, not too much. If you're burning or tanning, you've exceeded how much vitamin D you can possibly make.
A moment ago, you were talking a little bit about how the UVA rays, is it, that we're exposed to at mountain time can help break down our collagen in ways that we are not happy about. I see a lot of supplements with collagen in them lately, like bone broth and, you know, drinks and proteins and different things. Do you have any thoughts on the efficiency or effectiveness of those?
Absolutely. I want to just take a step back about the rays. So we have the UVA rays, which are what I call the aging rays. They're deeply penetrating. So they go through clouds, they go through windows, and they're deeper penetrating. And that's why we're seeing the deep collagen changes. The UVB rays are what most sunscreens are based off of, which was why you can't trust the SPF only on a sunscreen, because the SPF is based off of protection against UVB. It's not, there's no measurement to protect against UVA rays. So that's why you want to look for zinc oxide, because that will protect the whole spectrum. And the UVB rays are the burning rays. They're superficial. They cause brown discoloration. They'll burn you, but they don't penetrate as deeply with the collagen. So applying collagen topically to the skin is a large molecule. It won't penetrate. So we want to stimulate it from below. And there's actually quite a bit of research on collagen peptide supplements. There are benefits from it. Some people will argue dogmatically that it's not possible to absorb them. And maybe that's true, but we don't know quite the mechanism of action, but these are a chain of amino acids. They're not a complete protein. They're a chain of amino acids that dissolve into their amino acids and our body takes them up. And there are receptors in the gut for these collagen peptides, and they help our joints, they help our skin. In particular, in the studies with skin, we have seen, and there's been meta-analyses on these, like good studies, we have seen an increase in hydration of the skin, a decrease in wrinkles, a decrease in fine lines, and an improved skin barrier. So that basically means like you're holding in moisture better. And anytime we hold in moisture better, our skin looks plumper. So I do recommend them. I recommend a grass-fed regenerative leaf sourced because you want to be careful about making sure it's not contaminated with heavy metals and things like that.
Thank you for that. Also, when you were mentioning sunscreens that you prefer have zinc oxide or titanium, some of those, I know I'm pretty fair, so I've used a lot of sunscreens and some of them even give me a white cast a little bit. Have you found that there are some that are getting better with that, or that they're finding some workarounds, or should we just not care?
Yeah. So, you know, those are the guidelines you look for. And then within that, you want to find something that's cosmetically elegant for your skin. And everyone's going to be different, especially based on your skin tone. So I have two or three, and I use tinted sunscreens. So tinted sunscreens in particular double as a makeup. Like that's all I have on right now is just tinted sunscreen. Wow. And the tinted sunscreen has iron oxide in it, which the iron oxide in particular is very good for preventing pigmentation, because we now know that visible light can contribute to pigmentation like melasma and brown sunspots, basically. So I like tinted sunscreens. I find that they're a little bit more elegant. There are many, many brands out there. I'm happy to mention brands if you'd like, but it's more of like playing around and seeing what works for you so that you don't even feel like you have plastic on your skin or like that saran wrap, like occlusive feeling that nobody likes. And as long as it has zinc oxide, avoid the chemicals, and then with or without tint.
Which chemical or two would you most strongly suggest we avoid?
Yeah, I don't like any of the I haven't even looked at the chemicals around anymore because I throw them out if they send them to me. But it's the salicylates, even the octinoxates, obviously the parabens and all of that. I just look for zinc oxide. And they're micronized. So they basically smash them more, not so they're nanoparticles, but so they're microparticles. So they sort of blend on top of your skin. They're inert. Zinc oxide is inert. It's not absorbed by your skin. So it's ultimately dependent on how thickly you apply it in order for it to be effective. And one of the things I've noticed just by probably doing skin checks for over 100,000 people over 20 years is I'll notice maybe no brown spots and sun damage in the center part of the face, but I notice a lot on the periphery of the face. So I often will have people, as their hair is pulled back while they're in a bra, putting sunscreen on the periphery and bringing it forward towards the nose into the eyelids, up to the eyelid margin for all of that incidental light.
Great tip. Thank you.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with dermatologist Dr. Jen Haley. She joins us from time to time on The Mountain Life to give us all this invaluable information about what we all should have done 25 years ago. And you know, that brings up a question, Jen. I'm wondering, you know, like when we were all raised, when we were in junior high or whatever it was, it was still put baby oil on so you can get more tan. And I wish that we had known what we know now. Of course, we all have that perspective as we get older about a lot of things. But do you find now that young people are really aware that they need to be putting on sunscreen?
I think, you know, I wish the same thing. And I remember being in my mid-20s and sunscreen came out and I was like, ew, why would I want that? I want to get a tan, right? I had no idea, you know, until I started examining people and seeing patterns in their bodies of, I think of like a rotisserie chicken, you know, like the raw chicken versus the dark, crunchy lack of suppleness. And that's kind of what happens over years to our skin. So anyone listening, if you look at the upper inner part of your arm near your armpit, that's natural aging of the skin. Tiny bit of loss of elasticity, but everything else is environmental, which is powerful because we have control over it at any age. And I don't want this coming off to be as sun is bad because sun is good. It's a life force. It's a vital energy source and we need it. We just want to use it wisely. So what was your question again? I'm sorry.
Well, if young people are more, yes. You know, there's a trend towards really realizing the importance of sunscreen.
Definitely. I think there's almost a little bit too much of an obsession with it. And they're doing too many layers and too many products, especially for young people. So I think there's more of an awareness of it, yet it doesn't have to be complicated to be effective.
Okay, that's great. I love to hear that. Just in review a little bit, because you've thrown out a lot of words here that our listeners may not be accustomed to, but just going back to the collagen, you want to find the collagen peptide and grass-fed. So if you're going to ingest collagen, there's that. And then these things that we ingest that can serve as sun protection, you talked about the polyphenols, the astaxantha.
Yes, polyphenols, astaxanthin, which is astaxanthin. And that's what makes shrimp and salmon pink, and it comes from krill.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Great. And then there was this really long word that I didn't catch that ended in like lucitonin.
Yeah. we have to talk Latin in dermatology. So yeah. we sound smart, right? But it's basically Polypodium lucitonis, which is the genus and the species. And it's a fern block extract, but the three brands to look for that contain that I'm familiar with and I trust are HelioCare, SunSafe RX, and Inner Glow Vitamins, Inner Glow.
Yeah, okay. And do you imagine that they sell these things at a natural food store, or at like Alpine Apothecary or places like that?
Yeah, I mean, I know that the HelioCare, even I think it was at Walgreens. I think it's even at Walgreens. And the SunSafe RX is online and the Inner Glow is online. Although I know Alpine Apothecary, and I'm sure they have something really cool and similar to it.
I remember reading a thing a while back, a quote from Sarah Jessica Parker that said, "Nothing ages you like disappointment." And I know that you have a holistic approach to radiance and how we emit from the inside out. What kind of things, besides our strong diet and a little bit of safe sunshine, would you suggest for people to get the best radiance and happiness kind of emitting through them, through their skin and everything else?
Right. I think that I'm in the longevity biohacker world, and there's a lot of external reach for answers outside of ourselves. So I think it's sitting in silence often and feeling what you need as a human, and connecting with others in an authentic way is missing in America in many ways, having those connections. And you can see, like, when you're with your friends and you're with people you love, like when we first connected on here, Lynn, it's like your eyes light up, and there's nothing more beautiful than when your eyes light up. And that goes along with having a sense of purpose. So being positive, having a purpose-driven life and connection, I think are undervalued when it comes to my industry in this world of aesthetics, where people want to reach for treatments, yet there's still something missing. The Shen is kind of like in Chinese medicine, what you call it. And it's that vital life force. And that's what I think we all should focus on, rather than isolating ourselves to do this rigid routine.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. Also, I was curious when you mentioned that even computer light can age the skin. I mean, we always hear about how it's, you know, rough for our serotonin and melatonin and all the onins, but how does it affect the skin?
Yeah, in particular, melasma is a condition that's really challenging to treat. And it's basically brown patches on the face, often in women who are pregnant, right, or on birth control. I've experienced it myself, most commonly in middle skin tones. So I'm half Spanish, so I struggled with it for a while. It can even look like you have a mustache if it's on the upper lip. It's difficult to reprogram those pigment cells to kind of calm down, because they're very sensitive to heat and they're very sensitive to light. For many years, we weren't having much success treating it until we realized the association with heat, like hot yoga or cooking over a hot stove or sitting near the fireplace, and also visible light. visible light stimulates the pigment cells, and it also stimulates mutations or errors. Every time our cells turn over, there's little errors to be made. And that goes back to nutrition and being healthy on the inside, because our body has an amazing capacity, if we get out of its way, to correct all the errors of metabolism. So, or all the errors that are made, the mutations that are made that can potentially turn into a skin cancer. So I look at the skin as an immune organ, a clue as to what's going on inside the body. So when I see someone who's getting a lot of skin cancers, I will investigate further to see why their immune system is not able to keep those under control. Because sun itself shouldn't cause an excessive amount of skin cancer, because our body has an ability to repair to a certain degree. It's only if we get too much sun, or our body's immune system has been weakened from maybe even stress or trauma, or obviously another illness, or the food we're putting in that's toxifying our body.
Wow, so there's almost like a bug in the code or something, and you want to figure it out.
And it's called the exposome. So it's basically all the things that we're exposed to during our lifetime every day. You know, we have a choice to go in one direction or another direction based on the information we know today, right? Which will change over time. And that affects our genetics, these epigenetics. So your genetics are not what you're born with. 80% to 90% of how you show up in the world is controllable by your choices, whether the gene that you were born with turns on or turns off, which is really cool and really powerful.
Really empowering, yes.
Yeah. Totally empowering. And it's never too late.
Yeah, that's good to know. Well, Jen, we were speaking a bit before we started the interview about a recent retreat that you went to, talking about the malleability of the brain and neurofeedback and things like that. And I found that to be really interesting, how you bring that sort of knowledge into your practice of dermatology. Can you just tell us briefly what that was about?
Sure. So I look at the skin as an organ. It's your largest visible organ, and it represents the health of all of your organs, right? So we have to look at the body as a whole, not just as skin is separate from everything else. And we all exercise. Pretty much everyone listening to this is into some sort of an outdoor activity. And that's why we live in Park City. We're familiar with building our bodies, yet we forget about our brains over time. And when I was trained in medical school, we were taught that the number of brain cells you have is stagnant. You know, you build them and they never change. And that's absolutely not true. There's this concept of neuroplasticity, and we're constantly being able to expand ourselves. And neurofeedback basically will map your brain out. We'll see which trails are the most prominent on the brain, right? There are certain trails that are prominent and very specific to my brain, and that's my default mode network. That's where my brain wants to default all the time, which makes me unique, but yet not necessarily using the full capacity of my brain. So by doing neurofeedback with an expert who understands this concept and how to personalize it for you, because you don't want to just do it frivolously where it can hurt you, it creates new trails to get to the same point. So we can get to the mountaintop with different trails by using the full capacity of our brain, and rather than using the same pathway all the time. And that allows for enhanced creativity, enhanced expansion, enhancement of everything. So whether you're a professional athlete and you want to expand by being able to connect your body to your brain in new ways, or whether you're an executive CEO and you want to think out of the box, or, you know, whatever phrase you want to use, that's what neurofeedback allows you to do. So that's why I went.
That's really interesting, because we, in the last couple of months on this show, we interviewed someone who was writing a book about just that, about new things and how it can affect your, you know, the malleability of your brain, and how it, you know, especially as you're aging, you know, you're in your 50s and 60s, and we start thinking about these things and keeping our brains active. And so the message is, you know, don't be scared about doing new things. Just go for it.
We really don't, I don't like to have that concept of aging, and I don't ask people their age because it doesn't matter. I mean, I love the wisdom with age, right? I would never want to give that up, but we don't have to relinquish or give up on the idea that we can't continuously expand and grow. And that's what the beautiful part of this is we have the ability to expand our brain, which boosts our mood, boosts our motivation, improves our emotions, and it enhances our connections with others and ourselves.
Absolutely. So I have a kind of off topic question for you, but one thing I've been seeing a little about in the news regarding skin is Ozempic face. Because all these folks are, you know, and more power to them, are able to drop some weight that maybe has been really problematic for them for a long time. But the skin laxity and or elasticity and firmness seems to be a little bit droopy. So what are you hearing, or what are you suggesting for people who maybe want to firm things up?
Mm-hmm. I'm certified in peptides, so I understand the world of peptides as well. And I'm not opposed to Ozempic. It's known by semaglutide, and there's also Mounjaro, which is tirzepatide, and they work on the GLP-1 agonist or the GIP-1 agonist. And these are basically, they make you feel hungry. I mean, not hungry. They shut off the hunger trigger, and they also slow things down in the stomach. And the thing about that is they work very effectively, but they make people lose weight rapidly, which can be good if you need to reset, right? Kind of reset the receptors to a new homeostasis so that you can move on. Where they don't work is if someone is not going to the gym and lifting weights and they're losing their muscle mass too rapidly, because our muscles send out signals called myokines, which are just signals that tell our bones to get thicker. And losing muscle and having decreased bone mass is very linked to mortality, especially in women as we age. So we have to be very careful about maintaining muscle. So with the rapid weight loss, that's why we're getting saggy faces. So if the weight loss is fast from any means, it's going to cause sag in the face. It's not necessarily just these particular agonist or GLP-1 agonist. It's not the Ozempic in particular that's at fault. It's just because they're really effective, you know?
Sure.
So with that being said, how I'll counsel my patients is I'll have them wait about 6 months and make sure things stable off, allow the skin cells to turn over a couple cycles. It takes about 3 months to get a whole skin cell layer to cycle through. So we want to do that in two cycles, 6 months. Collagen remodels about every 3 months to 6 months. And then we'll see where they're at there. At that point, you can look at doing fillers. You can do laser tightening procedures. There's many things you can do, but at all times we want to do weight training, making sure you get 1 gram per pound of body weight in a form of protein, which it shuts off that hunger, that desire for that. From these, so I have a hard time getting that protein into patients. And by doing that, if you think about your bone structure, it's not just your arms and your legs. We've got bone structure in our face. So one of the reasons we look saggy is because we lose the bone structure in our face and in our jaw. So preserving that is going to help with these effects. And I find that after 6 months, maybe people need a laser tightening procedure, like microneedling with radio frequency, something like that is often beneficial. But then you get the procedure, and that takes 3 to 6 months for collagen. So everything's a very slow process, and it's all about balance, and there's no black and white. We're living in the gray zone.
Fascinating. That is great. Thank you.
Okay. Jen Haley is a dermatologist who practices in Scottsdale, Arizona. She's a part-time Park City resident, and we always love to have her on the show to impart all of this incredible wisdom that you have. And I just love how multifaceted you are in the way you approach skin health. So thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm glad you're so interested in this, and I hope I shared some words that will help everybody feel empowered.
And again, that was Dr. Jen Haley, our KPCW dermatologist, shall we call her. Thanks for tuning into The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City. One more mention, The Mountain Gazette, if you heard that interview in the first half of the hour and you're interested in subscribing, the deadline is April 29th to subscribe so that you get this spring's edition of Mountain Gazette. You can go to mountaingazette.com. Mountain spelled out,